I'm Dan Pierce, and this is Pressure Cooker.
I said I will never wear the hijab or give up my mini skirts. Never.
It's the outrageous story of two misfits living on the fringes and how they became the central players in a sprawling terror investigation.
We just hung out and played video games and smoked weed and did what we do, you know.
Pressure Cooker is available on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Obviously, we're going to be talking about a lot of things. We will, of course, be talking about China, but the center of our conversations will be about jobs and growth, critical minerals, and fighting climate change and continuing to build an economy across our continent that works for all of our citizens.
It's quite the agenda. It might seem like the only thing missing is world peace. U.S. President Joe Biden will arrive this evening for a long-awaited official visit to Canada. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and the U.S. President will meet at a time of both economic and political instability, both here in North America and around the world. And so to get a sense of what we might expect, I'm joined by Tonda McCharles, Toronto Star's Ottawa Bureau Chief, and Amanda Coletta, Canada correspondent for The Washington Post. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tonda, the Prime Minister has been waiting for this visit since Joe Biden was elected. There is the possibility, some people believe, that it could be overshadowed, at least with news locally, that the Liberal MP Han Dong is leaving the Liberal caucus. Global News reported last night that he had met with a Chinese consul general and asked China to hold off on freeing Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor from detention in China. Han Dong has denied those allegations. But what do you think this will do in terms of casting a shadow on this summit?
Look, it's definitely going to come up. I mean, the two leaders have already flagged that they intend to talk about China and Chinese interference. And how does each country deal with China geopolitically? So, look, it's an element of their discussion, but this is a much more broad-ranging and busy agenda that's going to cover the waterfront on a whole bunch of issues. And you said, you know, all that's missing is world peace. Well, arguably, they plan to talk about world peace in Ukraine as well. So that's on the agenda. I think it's a domestic issue. It won't overshadow the visit.
Amanda, how in line are Canada and the United States on how to deal with a China that's projecting its power on the international stage in a different way than it has in past, perhaps?
Well, when the U.S. ambassador to Canada, David Cohen, was in his nomination hearings, he sort of raised that, you know, one of the areas that he was looking for Canada to be more engaged was on China. And in Pacific, he was looking for Canada to unveil a China strategy, which it's now done. And he has been fairly complimentary about what's in it. But I mean, there are certain alliances that the United States is creating, you know, the Quad, the partnership between the United States, the United Kingdom, Australia on nuclear propelled submarines that Canada's not part of. So, you know, as Tonda mentioned, China will come up. And this question of interference, you know, Ambassador Cohen has said, it's no surprise it's happening. We need to know what the alleged elections interference is targeting and if it's working. And I expect Biden would sort of echo those remarks if he's asked about it, which I suspect he will be.
There will be a lot to shoehorn into this 24-hour meeting. You heard the Prime Minister say that jobs are the top of his agenda. Last month, President Biden gave his State of the Union address. Take a listen to a little bit of what he had to say.
Made in America. I mean it. Lumber, glass, drywall, fiber optic cable. And on my watch, American roads, bridges, and American highways are going to be made with American products as well.
Made in America, I mean it. Tonda, for Canada, the Buy American policy is a real sore point. Pierre Poilievre, conservative leader, wants exemptions. Do you think there's any way the Prime Minister can push the President on easing that policy, given the standing ovation he got in Congress when he made that announcement?
Look, I think that Canada intends to make that case. The Canadian officials, when they talk about this, however, they basically believe that the Buy American policy, as it applies to the building of infrastructure, roads, bridges, etc., is a lesser threat than is getting cut out of the American plan to invest heavily billions and billions and billions of dollars in creating a clean energy economy and, you know, electric vehicle manufacturing jobs and critical mineral supplies. That the infrastructure piece and everything that goes into that is much, I would say the Canadian officials say that much of what is the bulk of cross-border trade is already covered under the Free Trade Pact, and that's a lesser threat to Canadian businesses. Now, Canadian business leaders, they do want to be exempted. They do want to be included in that kind of support for infrastructure building by the Americans. But I don't expect there's going to be huge news on that front out of this meeting. Mm. I think the priority for both the administration, according to the briefing they gave us yesterday, and for the Canadian government, is to ground the attempt to build a North American and a resilient supply chain in the newer industries is going to be front of their agenda. And on that front, maybe we'll hear some announcements. But as it regards, you know, do Canadian companies get a cut of the procurement and contracts in rebuilding bridges, roads, and et cetera, south of the border? I don't expect that to be a huge part of what we hear tomorrow.
Amanda, in the United States, is there any appetite for Buy North America, not just Buy America?
We actually heard a White House official who was speaking about this visit yesterday sort of reference North American economic integration, including around greening the economy. And, you know, we've seen in the past with the what was then the Build Back Better bill that Canada has pressed for carve outs on, in that case, subsidies for electric vehicles that were being made with union labor in the United States and in U.S. factories. You know, Canada went so far as to threaten to impose tariffs. We haven't really seen that happen so far, in part because, as Tonda mentioned, I think, you know, government officials and analysts that I've spoken to have said they're still really trying to figure out whether Biden's Buy American plans will have any impact on Canadian industries and to what extent that's the case. Mm.
Beyond the issue of the economy, and that seems to be the umbrella under which many of these discussions will happen, there's the issue of national security. Amanda, what's going to be top of the agenda for the United States during this visit?
Biden administration officials have indicated that defense is a major priority, particularly in the context of the war in Ukraine. It's no secret that U.S. officials have long been pressing Canada to up its defense spending. Canada is still falling short of the NATO target of 2% of GDP. And there's also the issue of NORAD modernization. In comments this week, the U.S. ambassador to Canada sort of said that he was looking for more specifics on what resources have been allocated to this and really the timeline for when Canada expects to get some of this work done, which the United States would like to expedite.
Tonda, where does Canada stand in those discussions? Again, this is a nation that, as the war in Ukraine has unfolded, there are announcements constantly, it seems, coming out mm-hmm. of Ottawa mm-hmm. about support for the Ukrainian government and the Ukrainian military. But beyond that, where is Canada in that conversation?
So you know, it's pretty clear the U.S. officials have been flagging that, look, we're happy with Canada's efforts on Ukraine and went so far as to effusively praise Justin Trudeau yesterday, saying, you know, the Canadian government needs no lessons from us. They're all in on Ukraine. Where the defense piece comes into play is both in the context of continental defense and also to a certain extent in what Canada is prepared to do to step up and help on the Haiti issue. You know, the destabilization that we're seeing in Haiti right now is another priority for the U.S. But look, on continental defense, that's a big piece right now. All those balloons that were floating around in the north of Canada and drifting southward and the buoys they saw in the Arctic Sea, that's a worry. It highlighted the need for a robust continental defense plan. And what the U.S. has telegraphed to Canada yesterday is like they want details. Sure, it's all well and good for Canada to point to last year saying, oh, we're going to spend $5 billion more on NORAD over the next 6 years. But the U.S. points out that, sure, it's also well and good you're going to buy 88 F-35 jets, but you don't have the infrastructure in the north to land them. You don't, your runways aren't built. They want to know how fast Canada is going to spend that money and what's the timeline. They want actual progress on those issues. So does Justin Trudeau come to the table and say, okay, we're prepared to accelerate some of this? Or does he say, ease up, we're doing what we can in the time frame we can? That is a big irritant, I think, in this visit. And there's a reason why they do these visits. It's not just to pat each other in the back and say we're you know, the best of friends. The fact is that these leader visits are expected to advance some of the more prickly issues.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart MacLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
What about the issue of Haiti? You raised this. We talked about it yesterday and talked about just how complex the situation on the ground there is right now. People afraid to go out because they're worried that they'll be kidnapped. Mm-hmm. We spoke with the former Chief of Defense Staff, Tom Lawson, who said he wouldn't advise Canada following the U.S.'s guidance in leading an international stabilization force because this will go on, he thought, for years, if not decades. Do you think the Prime Minister will bend to the pressure of the United States in taking that lead role in stabilizing Haiti?
Look, I think it's an open question what Canada's going to do on Haiti. What Justin Trudeau is really pushing is that everybody, U.S., France, European allies, have to do is up the sanctions on the elite in Haiti who are funding some of the criminal gangs. And, you know, whether Canada's prepared to step in and lead, for example, some kind of other U.N. mission, it's almost a movie that the world has seen before. There's been UN missions and efforts in Haiti. Things are very unstable now. It's a cycle that I think has given everybody reason to pause. But will Canada step in and offer perhaps more police support? It's not clear where that's all going yet. But I do expect something to come from the meeting, because the U.S. is also tying the Haitian question and what is happening with the migration out of that country to the whole issue of immigration and migration and continental challenges on that front. So, you know, those two issues may be tied in all of this. If Canada wants changes on immigration at Roxham Road and the border, perhaps they have to step up and do something on Haiti.
Let's talk more about that. 5,000 people crossed at Roxham Road in January alone, and there is concern from the United States about those migration patterns, from Canada as well, in terms of what the Safe Third Country Agreement may or may not be facilitating. Here is what the Conservative leader, Pierre Poilievre, and the Prime Minister had to say about that issue last month.
It is his job to close the border, and we're calling him to do it at the Roxham Road passage within 30 days.
If Pierre Poilievre wants to build a wall at Roxham Road, someone could do that. The problem is we have 6,000 kilometers worth of undefended shared border with the United States.
What does Canada want the United States to do about these crossings, Tonda?
Well, Canada would like the U.S. to accept back refugee claimants, just as we do at official border crossings, that come across at the irregular points. But the U.S. has not agreed to yet extend that. And to be honest, it's a challenge for both countries, which is what we've heard from both sides in this week of lead up to this visit. There are migrants crossing both ways. The bulk are coming into Canada right now. But that was a hangover, if you will, from the Trump administration sort of broad brushstroke of being unwelcoming to many refugees from many countries. Mm. And I think that at this stage, there's no question. The agreement calls for it to be reviewed periodically. Those talks have been stalled for a while. I think everything right now is tied to what the U.S. calls the broader question of root causes of migration across the continent. So will Canada take in more Central American refugees to ease the pressure on Biden's administration south of the border, in the border with Mexico? It's an open question. We keep hearing them talking about we're all looking to deal with a broader issue here and create more pathways for regular migration. So stay tuned on that.
Amanda Coletta, how responsive do you think the United States would be to Canada's concerns about these border crossings. The Prime Minister has said he hopes that there will be an announcement soon, but there is also the speculation that the U.S. isn't particularly interested in having a close look at that Safe Third Country Agreement. What's your sense?
Right. Well, you know, it's really interesting because the increase in irregular crossings from the United States into Canada has been going on really since Trump's inauguration in 2017. And Canadian officials have been saying for almost as long that they're working on, quote unquote, modernizing the Safe Third Country Agreement with their U.S. counterparts. I think Minister Mendicino told Radio-Canada in December, actually, that the negotiations were effectively over and that an agreement was months, not years away. So some of the rhetoric we've been hearing from Canada, it sort of echoes what officials here have said for years. And I guess it's kind of hard to square with what we've heard from some U.S. officials who have said, you know, we have very little incentive to reopen the agreement. So that doesn't mean that there won't be some announcement related to this, you know, this week or in the near future. But as Tonda mentioned, the U.S. really sees this issue at the northern border as one slice of a broader problem concerning migration in our hemisphere. And it also pales in comparison with what it sees at its southern border. Mm. So if Canada, I think, can help out on maybe addressing some of the root causes of migration, perhaps there would be, you know, some flexibility in taking a look at this. But it's, you know, part of this bigger picture for them.
Tonda, a lot of pop around meetings like this, flags all up in Ottawa and people, you know, vacuuming up the red carpet and what have you, making it presentable. What is accomplished in conversations like this? As you said, it's not just a lot of back padding, but there's something larger about a meeting like this beyond the symbolism. What can actually be accomplished in 24 hours?
Well, the Canadians are making much of the fact that, look, no president in recent memory has stayed overnight in Canada. You know, Obama, when he came up to see Stephen Harper and Trudeau, was bombed in one, you know, flew in, flew out the same day. That the Bidens are coming, that Biden's bringing his wife, that the prime minister and his wife are spending, you know, at least an hour. It's funny, even the Americans said dinner, but the Canadians say snacks at Rideau Cottage tonight. They're going to have a chance to have a in-depth conversation around bilateral and global issues without, you know, all the other agenda items that accompany them when they meet at an international summit, for example. So does this further not just some of the immediate issues on an agenda? Does it further the ability to have frank conversations around a whole bunch of things? Already the Americans have characterized that relationship as a warm one. It's Justin and Joe, they say. I think what it does from both sides view, at least as they're telling us, is that it furthers and deepens these conversations and relationships. But the relationship between the two countries goes beyond any president or prime minister. Mm. So does it anchor, I think, you know, action and willingness on the officials on both sides of the border to advance issues? Perhaps it does a bit of that too. If everybody takes their cue from the boss, right?
But is there, just very briefly, is there pressure on the prime minister to get something out of this beyond, yeah, they're paying attention to us?
Absolutely there is. I mean, I think that, you know, it's one thing to sort of downplay expectations only to show up at a news conference and, you know, wave a few announcements. I think that we'll all be looking for real progress on some of these things and also to see, you know, get a window on how deep the irritants really are. You know, if the U.S. is really applying a lot of pressure on defense spending, well, you know, will that make a difference in how the Liberal government plots its way forward on defense spending? Mm. They've been making other choices to support social policies and not, to a great, great extent, defense spending. So,
Amanda, just briefly from you, I mean, do you see consensus among these two leaders in addition to all of the optics? Is there the opportunity for substantive conversations?
There's definitely greater policy alignment between Justin and Joe than between the prime minister and the previous U.S. president. And, you know, I think it's also important because, at home, the president has a divided Congress, which presents its own challenges. He has these very tenuous relationships abroad with Russia, with China, even in our own continent, with the Mexican president who just this week was accusing the State Department of lying in a report about human rights abuses that it alleges are taking place there. Mm. So I think the president appreciates that this is a relatively friendly relationship, but it's also a reminder that Canada is not exactly the number one priority for Americans, and that having a visit like this really focuses the entire government apparatus on Canada for, you know, a particular period of time. And so they'll try to make as much of that as they can.
Thank you both.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Tonda McCharles, Toronto Star's Ottawa bureau chief. Amanda Coletta is the Canada correspondent for The Washington Post. CBC News will have live coverage on Friday, hosted by John Northcott in Toronto. Analysis from Catherine Cullen in Ottawa as President Biden addresses Parliament. That's on CBC Radio at 1:30 p.m. Eastern and on your CBC Listen app.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.